from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Sudan's former president, Omar al-Bashir, has been imprisoned, according to reports this morning. This comes after months of protests and a coup last week that ousted Bashir, who is wanted by the International Criminal Court for overseeing ethnic cleansing in Darfur. We'll talk about the latest developments in Sudan. Then at 10:30, a new documentary, Unsettled, Seeking Refuge in America, highlights the struggle of LGBTQ asylum seekers who fled violence and persecution in their home countries for a better life in the Bay Area. We'll talk to the film's director and producer, Tom Shepard, ahead of the film's world premiere tonight in San Francisco as part of the San Francisco Film Festival. That's next, after the news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Thousands continue to protest in Sudan's capital to demand a transition to civilian rule after the military overthrew Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir last week. Bashir, who took power in 1989, and is wanted by the International Criminal Court for overseeing ethnic cleansing in Darfur, is being held in prison, according to reports that came in this morning. We're going to talk about the latest developments in Sudan, and joining us is Zach Verton. He's a fellow with the Brookings Institution Doha Center, and welcome to the program.
Thanks, Michael. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. Also glad to have, and I welcome Mohammed Jaffer Al-Khalifa. He is a graduate student at Stanford and a Sudanese activist. And welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Thank you so much, Michael, for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. And Zach Verton, let me begin with you, and let's just outline what is happening now. The demonstrations are continuing, and al-Bashir is apparently imprisoned ironically, in that Khobar prison in Khartoum, where thousands of people, political prisoners through decades, were held with all kinds of human rights violations. But at this point, do we have any idea, first of all, what's going to happen to him? The International Court would like to put him on trial, and Uganda has been talking at least about the possibility of amnesty.
Right. I don't think we know what the status is. These reports are credible, but not entirely confirmed. Obviously, many of the protesters on the street are concerned in many ways, first with the state of the new government and what that looks like, and ensuring there's an opportunity to unravel the sort of security state that's been in control during Bashir's tenure. But second, they will return to the question of Bashir and justice for him. Right now, as with many other things in Khartoum in these really critical hours and days, a lot is fluid, and his fate remains to be determined.
Well, everything is up in the air. In fact, the fate of who's going to be taking over is undetermined, too, because there are many out there in the streets who would like to see a civilian rule rather than a military one. And the military is identified with the regime and identified with a lot of its corruption.
That's right. And many were excited about Bashir's departure, but then very concerned just a few hours later when a military council stepped in. Right. They thought this is just the same old regime in different clothes.
Well, this could go it could go like South Africa. Or it could go like Libya. I mean, there are extremes and possibilities here, but the military right now is in charge.
Well, they are, but I think there's some signs for cautious optimism, particularly in the last 48 hours. And I will underline the word cautious. So there are talks ongoing between this transitional military council and a coalition of opposition parties that's in some ways representing the street. The military council has agreed to a mostly civilian cabinet. The question is just exactly what that looks like and what the relationship is with any military forces going forward. So, again, that's going on right now, but these are really the critical hours in the making of the new Sudan.
The new Sudan, though, it's on a different trajectory now because we don't really know. We've got this military rule, and they're talking about elections in 2 years, and they're also talking about they've done some things, at least, that look like they're trying to ameliorate the graft and corruption. Talk a bit about what's happening with the central bank, if you could.
More broadly, the economy has really flatlined in recent years after decades of corruption and cronyism and inequality, the really core issue at the center of Sudan's national ill.
Forgive me, Zach. That's why they went out in the streets. I mean, there was no bread, and there were really food shortages that were acute.
That's right. There have been protests against this government over political and economic malaise for years. This year was different, in part because the economy really did hit rock bottom and the government was forced to lift subsidies on food and fuel that had been in place for many years. And this ultimately started to impact people at all levels of Sudanese society. And that's really what helped sustain these awe-inspiring protests we've seen over the last 10 days.
But they have done something, at least with the central bank. I mean, they're talking about reviewing financial, seeing to it, for example, that all kinds of funds and all kinds of metals and holdings and everything are suddenly no longer under the control of the government.
Right. There's a wrestle for economic, political, and other power going on in Sudan right now, and economic renewal is going to be the key to any transition. Whatever form this takes, whatever the hybrid nature of a civilian military rule, Sudan's got $50 billion in debt. It's still under some outstanding U.S. sanctions and really has been seen as a place you can't do business for a long time. And that will have to change, and will have to change fast if a new government is to get on its feet. And in this regard, I think there's a really important role for the West to play.
What would that role be in your judgment?
Yeah, so the U.S. And others have had sanctions in place really since the 1990s, and in many ways for good reason. But I would argue that for too long, those tools were used primarily to punish the regime rather than to leverage change. And right now, I think there's an opportunity for the administration and for Congress to put these tools in play. Right, so they can have a discussion about lifting Sudan's state sponsor of terrorism designation, which is really kind of a scarlet letter in international politics and economics. They can talk about debt relief. They can talk about restoring diplomatic relations. So should this continue to move in the right direction, should a mostly civilian government be put in place, should these transitional reforms, this cautious optimism over the last few days continue, then there's a place for the U.S. To step in and try to help nudge this in the right direction. This will be determined first and foremost by Sudanese, absolutely, but I think there's an opportunity now for Washington to back those on the street and to give this transition the best chance for success.
We're talking with Zach Verdin. He is a fellow with the Brookings Institution's Doha Center and author of a book called A Rope from the Sky, The Making and Unmaking of the World's Newest State. And Mohammed Jaffer Al-Khalifa is a graduate student at Stanford. He's a Sudanese activist. And Mohammed, the economic issues from your perspective are really just a cover for the political issues, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I would like to first, Michael, if I may, I would like to first of all thank you so much and KQAD and KQAD blessed audience for having us today. Also, from this platform, I would like to send sincere greetings to the Sudanese Revolution martyrs who made the ultimate sacrifice and gave up their lives as peaceful protesters who were shot, tortured, and killed by the evil Sudanese regime. The economic issues, I would like to just mention this, as Zach was alluding to it, that this has been going on for a really long time. We're at a stage that the economic issues are overbearing. We have went out several times out to the streets demanding justice, equality, and better economical conditions for the Sudanese people. This time around, it's not about economic issues. This is very political at this stage. This is a specific and clear demand for the complete dismantling and oust of the al-Bashir regime. This is what's going on really this time around.
And what about a transition to, you're in favor of civilian rule, I presume, right?
Absolutely. This is the demand that we are asking for, is the complete transition into a civilian-led ruling. We, at this stage, completely object the Transitional Military Council, which is composed of high-ranking generals from the previous regime. So if I give you an example, for example, Burhan, the leader of TMC, the Transitional Military Council, was involved in some capacity in the Darfur genocide for sure. Hemeti was also involved in the, the hire for kill supply of armies to UAE and Saudi Arabia in their waged oppressive war.
They were involved in the Yemen war on the side of Saudi Arabia, yes.
Absolutely. But at what cost? At the cost of the life of innocent Sudanese people, at the cost of, the pain and suffering of their families. And you know, the destruction of a whole generation. So all of these things are not forgiven. And so to put it clearly, we do not really trust this transitional military council. I do appreciate that Zach mentioned the two lines that, you know, cautious approach. Yeah, very cautious. But I want to also extend to our audience here that we do not really trust them. We've had previous experiences with them. And in the past, they have demonstrated that they are not trustworthy and that they will lead the country into areas that we do not want to go to.
All right. Let me invite our listeners to join this conversation. There are demonstrations that are going on in Sudan. Ousted leader Omar al-Bashir has been moved into a prison, and the issues are pretty clear. We're talking about the possibility of civilian rule or ongoing military rule by, as our guest Muhammad Jafar al-Khalifa said, very linked to the old regime. And the old regime was one responsible, as so many of you remember, for the genocide in Darfur. We do welcome your calls, and you can join us now, and I invite you to do that. If you'd like to express an opinion here, you're welcome as well. And you can join us by phone. 866-733-6786 is the number for your calls, and you can be part of the program. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website and posting any questions or comments you may have there at kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Please feel free to be part of the program. Talking with Zach Virton from the Brookings Institution and Muhammad Jafar al-Khalifa of Stanford. And Muhammad, a quick question for you before we bring our listeners into this. You're trying to help out medically. You got people being killed in these protests, injured, thousands. Helping out with the medical treatment, what are you doing? And I'm sure many of our listeners would like to know maybe what they can do.
Sorry, Michael, my line was cutting up. Can you repeat your question one more time, please?
Just a quick question about how people can help with the protesters. You've been doing a lot to try to help medical treatment, protesters being killed and injured. What can people do, and what are you doing?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, I would like to just make sure that we are very aware of what is going on. Right now, the revolution is still continuing. We are not done. We continue to fight, and the major focus at this stage is the protest or the sit-in in front of the military headquarters in Khartoum and in all of the cities all over Sudan. So for our audience members, for the Sudanese or all the liberated free Sudanese around the world that are supporting the movement, right now we are doing a variety of different things, including raising awareness, obviously, of the fact that the revolution is still going and that our demands are not being met. Of course, we are fundraising in a variety of different ways to help support you know, the medical relief needed of the injured, of those who get killed, to support the families of the martyrs as well, and provide food, water, and assistance for them as they do their sit-in in front of the military headquarters in Khartoum.
And Zach Virton, if I could go back to you, do you see parallels here to the Arab Spring or to events that are ongoing in Algeria?
Let me just say, if it's all right, Michael, one point, a really tricky issue at the core of what Mohammed is noting about a civilian-led government, and he's surely echoing the demands of the street, and one can understand that. I think the issue of the composition of the government is particularly tricky for a couple reasons. One, there is not yet an agreed sort of shadow civilian government waiting in the wings. Now, that's in the works, but it's not there yet. And second, if you transition to an entirely civilian government without ensuring some kind of understanding or relationship with the military, a civilian government could have a very hard time corralling these really ubiquitous security forces that have dominated the state for some time. So there's also a risk that those are being pushed out because that could act as spoilers. And I think that really difficult question is one that's going to have as much impact on where this goes in the coming days and weeks.
Zach, if I may, we'll get back to the question I asked you, but thank you for that. I'd like to hear what Mohammed has to say in response to it. Mohammed?
Absolutely. I would say that is a very great point. It is definitely a concern, and definitely the composition of the government should entail or should include some sort of military forces to do their job. Where the divide is, or where the major question mark issue is that the process of going into or transitioning into a civilian-led government should not be overseen by criminals, to just put it very clearly. So what the transitional military council right now is doing, it is trying to put itself at the position of mitigating or leading the discussions and the process of inviting certain individuals to the table of this transition into civilian rule. What we're saying is we can do that. The people of Sudan can lead the process of making and composing the civilian government. We will do that, and it's not a difficult task for us to do. All we are requiring first to happen is that all the criminals and all the government of Sudan that is currently holding rule, that they are first ousted. That's our first and very clear demand at this stage.
So, Mohammed, you don't have any faith in this present military government talking about ridding Sudan of corruption and taking out the graft and all of that?
Zero faith. Zero faith. And I can tell you something, just to make it very clear. Zero faith, but if they want to show anything, they can show us by action. At this stage, we have not seen any arrests at this stage. And the arrests that you have mentioned, Michael, at the beginning of our conversation, we have not seen them. These are just reported faked news segments. This is something that the National Congress Party of Sudan, which is al-Bashir's regime, they are specialized in. They have forces out in the social media that are very specialized in faking news and misleading people and that sort of thing. But the truth is we have not seen a single picture, a single video, a single anything of any of the members of the previous regime, or actually the current regime, I would say, being prosecuted or detained or anything. So
Zach
the
Verdun,
point that I'm saying is that this government is still existing.
No, I understand. And Zach Verdun, your caveat notwithstanding, we're hearing from Mohammed it's a criminal regime. Nobody's been arrested. Nobody's been prosecuted.
Oh, it's early days. I completely understand the position of Mohammed and many of his colleagues in Sudan, and it makes perfect sense. This was an absolutely brutal regime, and easy for me to say from the outside. It's Mohammed and others whose future is really at stake. So one can understand the desire to move quickly, and the only point I think I would disagree on is that it is going to be difficult. I do believe that the Sudanese opposition and Sudanese both inside and outside government are up to the task, but it's not going to be an easy one. These are critical hours and days, but this is going to be a process that unfolds over the next 2, 3, 4 years. And it will be long, and it will be arduous, and it will be contentious, and that is ultimately far better than witnessing a Libya-like collapse.
Well, it gets into that question I asked you before, though, too, because when you think about, when you think about the Arab Spring, for example, or the events that are ongoing in Algeria, they do have parallels, don't they?
I think there are some parallels, and I do think probably Mohammed and others can tell you that there was definitely some reinforcement, some watching what was happening in Algeria and vice versa that gave people some additional inspiration. But I think it's important to note that while many outside Sudan have been watching over these last really awe-inspiring 10 days, the protests in Sudan began in December of last year, and they've been going on for the better part of 4 months. And they, unlike protests in the past, which the regime was able to crack down on quite successfully, these were longer. They were joined by a much broader segment of society, including the professional classes that had for so long been either driven abroad or co-opted. And so I think that's important to note, that the Sudanese have been at this not just for 10 days, but really for 4 months. And it's been something to watch.
Yeah, it's been since mid-December. And I'm going to get a caller on her. And by the way, if you'd like to join us, you can do it at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. And here is Louie. Louie, welcome. You're on the air.
This is Louie from Santa Clara. Thank you for you and your guest. I just want to confirm that the people are on the streets and they're not backing down, as Mohammed said. We had two revolutions before, even before the Arab Springs started. So Sudanese people are used to revolutions, and they know exactly what they need and what they want.
That seems to be in line with what Mohammed has been saying. But taking over a government after a revolution, and the thing about this, Mohammed, that strikes me is we don't know who the leaders of this revolution are or if there are leaders who are ready to step up and move into transition in terms of government control. There's been very secretive nature of who's leading the revolution, in large part to protect them from harm from this military force that was tied to Bashar al-Assad. Yeah.
Exactly. So the reason it is secretive, as you can imagine, Michael, is because their lives are in danger. If once you speak against this evil regime, you are a target for them. And so them operating in secrecy is understandable. And what I want to assure everyone who is concerned about who's coming next is it's not about who is coming next anymore in Sudan. It is what is coming next. What is coming next is law. What is coming next is freedom. What is coming next is peace. And in these conditions, the people with the right capacity, the people with the right experience, will step up and will lead us as people of Sudan independently and independent of any foreign interference in our land.
But where is the leadership? Do we know who the leadership is?
Of the association itself?
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about freedom and peace, you're going to have, you know, certainly individuals who will step up and take that stronger role of leadership.
Absolutely. There's many people right now who have been active already throughout the last 30 years and even before in a variety of different situations abroad or inside Sudan that we know of, that we have their trust or they have our trust. And we are not, honestly, what we are looking at this stage, Michael, is the oust of the regime itself is a massive victory. And the replacement with the people will get the job done. And we are not concerned if the people step in and take rule.
Let me thank the caller. And, Zach, I know you want in here, but let me just ask you about something that happened recently. The rebels in the south have actually announced an end to or a lull in hostilities. They've said that things are going to go up until July 31st, and they won't do anything until then. And if that indeed is the case, it could allow for a civilian government more easily to come in, couldn't it?
Well, time will tell. I mean, I think that's important. I think the fact that the military council, despite all the understandable reservations about it, has been bowing in some ways to pressure from the street over the last few days. There was a ceasefire initially announced. There was lifting of the state of emergency and of curfew in recent days. So it's really a testament to the protesters keeping up this fight. Just on the previous point about who is on the civilian side, you know, this is, of course, the question both in terms of representation and cohesion. I will say that there has been a committee of negotiators identified that include members both of the Sudanese Professionals Association, which you mentioned, as well as other opposition elements. They have met with the nominal head of the Transitional Military Council a number of times over recent days. Meetings are going on day and night, and there's a long way to go, but I'm just off the phone with a couple of those members, and there have been some preliminary progress to date. So, again, fingers crossed, cautious optimism.
Well, cautious optimism is a good way to think, and we will end on that note. Thank you, Zach Virton. Good to have you with us on Forum. Appreciate your being with us. Zach Virton, again, is the author of A Rope from the Sky and a fellow with the Brookings Institution and the Doha Center there. And Mohammed Jafar Al-Khalifa, thank you for being with us as well. And Khalifa is a graduate student at Stanford and a Sudanese activist. When we return, we're going to talk about a documentary called Unsettled. Stay tuned. It's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.